This is WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro 103.5, and this is another edition of Touchstones. I'm your host, Paul Nagy, and today we have an old friend of mine, Tom Hildebrand. Now, some of you who actually listen to this show, as opposed to just getting the downloads, may have heard him with me here about a month ago when I was droning on endlessly about my childhood. Luckily for posterity, that show did not get recorded, and so if you didn't listen to it live and streaming, you will never listen to it, thank goodness, and you will have not have been bored with the antics of my endless travels of growing up. Well, we decided that Tom was probably more interesting than I was, and that he probably deserved to actually talk rather than have to listen to me, ferret around in the deepest recesses of my memory. So, Tom, let's see, how did we meet? The way we met was after I came out here and fell in love, and then was tossed out on my ear after she decided she didn't love me anymore. I started going around to various religious places looking for solace, which is kind of what I do when I got nothing else to do and nobody to hang out with. And we met at a Search for God group, which is sponsored, which is a study group that was started in the Edgar Cayce ARE. And we went through the materials for quite a bit, and somehow, you know, and talking to each other, and we decided that we actually had some affinities in the understanding of the things mystical. And that's sort of how we became friends, I guess. At least that's the way I remember it. So what's your version of the story?
About the same. We met at ARE study group, which I'd been involved in for years and years. I was an area volunteer with the ARE. I was a contact person for study groups. If somebody was looking for a study group in North Carolina, Search for God study group, they would call me, and I did that since like 1990, 1991 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just recently given that up, but did it a long time.
Yeah, so how did you get into this? I mean, the way I got into this mysticism stuff was I've been doing it since I was a kid. But how about yourself? What's your story?
Well, in a similar, I've been doing it since I was young, too, or aspects of it. I was telling somebody the other day that when I was in high school, I used to go hunting. Or just out of high school, go hunting and take a double-barrel 12-gauge shotgun as well as a copy of Cahil Gibran's Prophet in my coat. And I'd get way down in the woods somewhere, and I would sit down next to a tree and read the Prophet, and it just felt real good to me. And then later, when I was in college, I could not understand why I love Gregorian chant so much the first time I heard it. But the first time I heard Gregorian chant, I loved it. Had never heard it before. It was a music appreciation course that I had to take.
Right, right.
And then later, I got into all the Carlos Castaneda stuff, Don Juan, teachings of Don Juan.
Mm-hmm.
And I would try to apply it. One of the times, Don Juan's suggestion was you go down to a waterfall and watch the waterfall backwards. And I lived out on a lake. And,
mm-hmm.
I took my canoe down to the dam one day, and I went over to the emergency spillway, and I just laid down on top of it, and I looked at the waterfall. And what I would do is I would just freeze the spot of water at one spot. I would look at one spot and freeze it, and freeze it, and freeze it, and freeze it. Just look at that one spot, just one spot, intense concentration. And it wasn't too long before I actually was seeing the waterfall backwards. It was like I would see the water before it actually got to that spot that I was watching.
Mm-hmm.
And I started hearing all this tremendous celestial music. And, I mean, it was amazing.
Did that sound like a Gregorian chant?
No, it did not sound like a Gregorian chant. I don't know. I can't describe it.
Yeah.
But later, I took my canoe back across the lake, of course, and I was just doing regular Jeremiah Johnson type things. I had friends used to think I was Jeremiah Johnson because I lived out in the middle of a lake like a hermit by myself on this little island and always chopping wood and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and a little cabin on the
yeah,
island.
Yeah, my back porch hung out over the lake.
Yeah.
Used to keep my canoe underneath the porch. But anyway, these friends came by later in a fishing boat, and I walked out there on the dock, and I was still in that state of ecstasy, I reckon you would call it, from that hearing that music and watching that waterfall backwards. And these friends were musicians, and they said, "Tom, what have you been smoking?" And I had to fess up that I hadn't been smoking anything. You know, they were sure that I had found some really good stuff somewhere,
yeah,
and they wanted me to share.
Yeah. Well, yeah, actually, when I was 16, you know, one of the ways that people induce trance these days, the ones who aren't using herbs and various other forms of illicit things, was through chanting and stuff like that. And drumming is another way of inducing trance. And when I was, probably 15 years old, you know, I was out, it was during a vacation time, and I was out, you know, by myself, and there wasn't any herb around, as it were. So I just went down. I had read about this stuff. I had read about things. So I basically was doing chanting. And I did all this kind of weird chants that I made up all by myself in a variety of ways. And, of course, I had been reading the Upanishads. It may have helped me a little bit to focus my attention. But, you know, I got high in the sky, but everybody else just thought I was crazy. When I'd tell them, well, come on and join in, you know, nobody would do it. They just thought I was crazy instead.
Well, just on that note, back in December 2007, I had sort of a reunion with a bunch of those friends from my...
Way back.
It was music people.
Mm-hmm.
And this one lady was going around the table. This was after all the music had ended and all the musicians were putting up the instruments and packing up the PA system and all that stuff. A bunch of us audience, old friends, were sitting around. And she was going around the table talking about how much she loved all these old friends. And she got to me and she patted me on the arm and said, "And here is Tom. He's subnormal, but all of us will one day probably learn something spiritual about him." And I had to laugh because she really, what she meant to say was, you know, he's interested in the paranormal. But she came out with, "He's subnormal, but we'll probably learn something spiritual from him one day."
Well, that's better than saying you were super normal.
Well, actually, years ago.
Well, what brand of soup is that? Yeah.
Years ago, before I really got very real, real, really active in the search for God, so to speak, my life was not going like I wanted it to go or thought it should be going. I couldn't understand it. And it occurred to me one time that if I could really get a reading like Edgar Cayce used to give readings to people, wouldn't it be wonderful to try to understand why all these things were happening to me that I didn't understand? And so I contacted the local ARE person at the time in Chapel Hill, which happened to be a lady named Anna Washington.
Yeah, actually, she's also a mutual friend of mine.
Yeah. She's not involved with the ARE anymore, but at the time she was. And I called her and asked her if she knew of a psychic, and her reply was, when she called me back, we talked for an hour, probably. And I apologized for asking her, because the ARE will not recommend psychics.
Right.
But at the end of that conversation, she said, "By the way, I do know a psychic." And so she actually referred me to Donna Gulick.
Well, yeah, actually, Donna's going to be on the show the beginning of next month.
All right. Well, yeah. Donna was the first actual psychic I went to see in this area. And her comment was that I wasn't around anybody that thought like I did, that I needed to be around people who would think like I did. Her suggestion was that I go to an ARE study group, that I go to a Course in Miracles group, that I come to some of her channeling sessions, start doing something to get out around people who thought like I did. And that was true, because I used to be a construction worker, And I was big time into carpentry and welding and stuff. But I always had this major fascination with the spiritual and the mystical and magical and the psychic.
Right. Well, blacksmiths and welders, the people who work around fire often have a fascination with things that are psychic. Somehow being around fire a lot causes the edges of things to melt.
It was interesting that one of Donna's comments during the course of the reading, she was commenting about the fact that I was a welder, and she said, "I don't get it, but that light feeds you somehow. That bright light feeds you somehow." And of course, now we've all known.
Now you know that light was just an analog for the true light, the true inner light, the star sublime, the star that causes you to melt into it. Right? Yes. Wonderful. Okay. Okay.
Well, you know, talking about light again, that just it occurred to me. I remembered a story down in Fayetteville that happened to me when I was out on that lake and that house. One night I was sitting there reading, very comfortable inside my house, when I realized on the other side of the lake, beyond the trees, dogs were barking like crazy everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blown away. How many, what the dogs? The lake itself was private, and you couldn't see homes. But the way the lake was round, and then probably 100 yards beyond the shore of the lake was solid trees, and then a fence,
mm-hmm.
barring, blocking off all the houses and homes that were on the other side. So you couldn't see them, but they were there, and they had dogs. And these dogs were going nuts. And so I decided I was going to step out and see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out, opened the door onto my back porch, which hung over the lake. And as soon as I stepped out on that porch, my hair stood on end, and the hair on my arms stood up. And so I stepped back, because, I mean, this was some strange going on here now. And so my first thought was, flying saucers. Well, actually, that was my second thought. My first thought was, it was just...
A ghost?
No, it was like goosebumps. Chilly.
Oh, yeah.
It was chilly. That was what it was.
You walk through a cold spot.
Really, and I just needed to put a coat on or something like that, and I'd be fine.
Right.
So I put a coat on, and I stepped back out there, and my hair went right straight up again, and I stepped back in. Now, just about all of my adult life, I have lived way out in the woods somewhere by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's always been... at the end of the road, down in the woods somewhere, no matter what county I've been in, it's beyond the beyond.
Right.
Way down in the woods.
It's out there someplace.
Yes,
right.
Always. Well, I realized that now I had a problem because I was actually a little bit afraid to go outside of my house because something weird was going on. And I realized that I was not going to be able to live like I like to live if I was afraid to go outside of my house. So the only thing that I could think of to do, well, two things. I put a coat on, I put a hat on. And then I imagined a spotlight from God shining on me just the same way that Jimmy Durante used to walk around this totally black stage talking at the end of his show with this spotlight following him everywhere he went. Well, in my imagination, I imagined a spotlight from God shining down on me. And I opened that door and went out. And my hair still tried to go up. And when I stepped outside, I realized there were other weird things going on. The top of the lake was totally in turmoil from fish. If you've ever walked up to the edge of a pond or a small creek and startle fish and they take off, the entire top of the lake was like that.
The fish were all like...
The fish would just...
They weren't scattering away. They were staying
there. Just constant, that constant turmoil. Something was really bugging those fish.
So there wasn't a helicopter up above?
I didn't see one. What I noticed when I stepped out that door was, number one, my hair was still going up in the air. I was in some kind of static field.
Right.
The fish were going bananas. There was a heavy, heavy fog. You really couldn't see anything. And the dogs were still going crazy. And I carefully went down the steps, and I lined myself up with my dock. I had rebuilt the dock, and I had a tall post that I'd left standing up out there. And I lined myself up with that post and with the side of my house, because I knew where they were in relation to each other.
Right.
And then I slid my feet. That's how thick this was, a thick fog.
Yeah, that's real thick.
And I slid my feet along, getting out there, because I was actually convinced that I was going to see a flying saucer. Because there had been a report in the news several days earlier, a sheriff's deputy working in Spring Lake had reported that he had seen a flying saucer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sure that I was going to get to see one.
Yeah.
You know, they had blown his off as, well, it was training flights from Pope Air Force Base.
Yeah, of course.
But this was a young man, a deputy, who had been born in Spring Lake, raised there all his life. I think he would know the difference between a UFO and a training flight.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, I was convinced I was going to see one.
Mm-hmm.
So me and my little spotlight from God were standing out on that dock in fog,
mm-hmm.
waiting to see that UFO. And it, quite frankly, never happened. I was very disappointed.
Eventually, the static let down. Your hair settled down. Your goosebumps
everything,
went away.
Everything went back to normal.
The fish settled back down.
The whole nine yards. The dogs quit barking. The fish settled down. The fog dissipated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and quite frankly, I was really let down, because I just knew that I was finally going to get to see a UFO. I'd always heard all my life it was the weirdos who lived out in the woods away from everybody else.
That's the ones to see the UFOs, yeah,
right?
People.
Well, I didn't get to see it.
Well, that was a close encounter of the almost kind, yes. So, Tom, in terms of paranormal events or partial paranormal events, how did you develop this interest in mysticism? So why don't you tell people about Edgar Cayce? We've mentioned him in passing, but we might as well say a little bit about who he is. By the way, we're also going to have another person from ARE here at the end of the month, Max Preston, and he's going to be talking about his poetry, but he's also going to be talking a little bit about his experience with the ARE. I'm not pushing the ARE, mm-hmm. folks. It's just that it's actually a very prominent movement out here. As is anthroposophy, and I am going to get a couple of anthroposophists to come on the show. They're just seeming a little shy about having coming on to the show with me.
No, to get Judy Fry.
Fry, yeah. Okay. So, So say a little bit about who All Edgar right. Cayce is.
Well, Edgar Cayce is regarded as the world's most well-documented psychics. He had a secretary, Gladys Davis, that recorded everything he said early on. I mean, I won't get into all the history, because I'm not a good history person. I get the gist of it. He gave phenomenal readings, and he was very devoted to helping people. And he became famous because his medical readings were so accurate. They could be verified. Doctors would give up on people, and in desperation, they would hear about Edgar Cayce in some manner, and they would get a reading from Edgar Cayce. And if you followed the recommendations that he gave in the way he gave them, almost invariably you recovered. And as this began to happen with people who had been totally given up on by doctors, his fame grew and more people came to him. It wasn't too long ago I read some article in a book, a guy was talking about how he had gone to actually work with Edgar Cayce for a little while. And when he walked in, he couldn't believe the volume of mail that Edgar Cayce carried him back into one of the rooms, and stacked all the way around the room, over 2 foot high, were letters from people requesting readings and help. And a lot of them had checks in them and stuff like that. But they had to go through them, you know, and most of them had to say, I'm sorry, the volume got too great. But he was so accurate. That was the main thing.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is that very reasonably accurate records were kept at the time. Shorthand records were kept, and they were transcribed by the person who took the shorthand. And actually, it became pretty much her vocation in life, the woman who kept the records.
Yeah. She had been told at one point, too, during the course of one of the readings, that she and Edgar Cayce were, in fact, soulmates.
Mm-hmm.
And she was many, many years younger.
Yeah. And you know, and so with those, with the records, it's actually, it is an amazing thing. And now with the with digital things as they are, one can actually get the full readings of Edgar Cayce, because they have been they are available digitally, and do research with them. I know that you've done a little research.
I've done quite a bit, but you know, I was just thinking too that
what are some of the aspects of of the Edgar Cayce readings that you've found interesting that you followed up on yourself in terms of research?
Well, one of the things, like I said, I was actually getting ready to say, I first became interested in the Edgar Cayce ARE, Association for Research and Enlightenment, because of the magic of it, that that man could lay down in a bunk in Virginia Beach and absolutely describe to a T everything that was going on in a man in California, say, mm-hmm. and even tell you what the flowers were doing, the trees were doing outside the window, and it could be verified. And there was an instance one time that he was supposed to give a reading, and Cayce laid down and said, "No, we don't have the body." Oh, there he is. He's late. He's getting on the trolley. He's coming across town. All right, he's getting off. He's coming up. Now we have the body. And Hugh Lynn, his son, ran to the phone and verified everything that Cayce had just said. That's why I was interested in it, the magic. And to be frank, I got a little annoyed about continually hearing about God and Jesus and Christ's spirit.
This is in the search for God.
Well, no, this is throughout, actually, the Cayce readings. When Cayce would give a reading mm-hmm. for somebody, it would be coming up, you know, that we are a portion of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually got annoyed with that because I was there after the magic. And I dropped my membership for a number of years in the ARE. But then later, when I really was doing a spiritual search, I rejoined again because I really wanted a different perspective on God and Jesus and religion than I was getting in the churches that I was attending.
So what were the churches you were attending?
Well, I was brought up Presbyterian. That was when I was brought up. And then I just searched around all over the place, and then I finally decided the best church for me was on my own, reading.
That's living true. Out in the woods.
That's it. I mean,
looking for flying saucers every time it gets foggy.
Well, no, I did a tremendous amount of reading. It never ceased to amaze me how I'd go in a used bookstore.
Some of the things that you were attracted to. Okay,
I would just tell you, I would go to a bookstore and reach up and pull one book down, and another one would fall out of the bookshelf and hit me in the foot. And that was the one I needed to read. I'd pick it up and look at it and go, "Wait a minute." And I would start reading that. I mean, there was just, it's amazing how I got led deeper and deeper and deeper into Christian mysticism.
So what were some of the things that attracted you along the way? Some of the authors, some of the books.
Well, now, I'm not a good...
you don't remember the...
My memory is like, I tell people nowadays that I'm spending a lot of time thinking about the hereafter.
Uh-huh.
I go in a room and go, "What in the heck am I in here after?"
Yeah, well, that's
I don't remember.
But this is old stuff, man. You should remember stuff.
I don't. My memory's not like that. I found that out. In fact, I used to be a vocational rehabilitation counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to get sent away every month or two for a week's training or so.
And you'd go away for a week and not know what you'd been
Well,
in,
no.
Right?
What happened is they sent me to a traumatic brain injury mm-hmm. workshop 1 week. TBI, and then they started giving all these coping strategies to help your clients cope with the fact that their memory had been damaged in that accident.
And you noticed that yours had been damaged.
No, I noticed that I already was using every one of those coping strategies.
Yeah.
That might result from the accident I had at 18.
Yeah, that's true.
I was in a body cast for a year.
Yeah.
You may have had
injuries.
I had a major head injury.
Yeah, that in itself may have.
My mother indicated that when she first made it into the emergency room.
You don't have to have a concussion to be a mystic, folks. Maybe Tom Hildebrand does, but the rest of us, you can be a mystic without having concussions. But okay. Yeah, that's a possibility. Yeah. Well, I always knew that you and I had something in common. We're both brain damaged. So I won't go into about how I'm brain damaged. So you can give any sense of progression. Well, you said you went from magic more to wanting something of the mystical or the metaphysical.
Well, I did, and it came about like I had been a member of the ARE for years and years on my own, just reading, living out in the woods, doing my thing, and reading the material and all the other stuff that I was drawn to read. But I never participated in anything. I never went to any lectures. I never went to any study groups or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And after that first reading, when Donna was saying, "You have got to get out," you know, because every time I would start trying to talk to some of the people I was with,
yeah,
about some of the things that I believed.
Have another beer, man.
No, it was like, oh, God, there goes Weird Tom again.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
The very first action I took after that reading is I looked up to see what kind of ARE programs were going on, because I had already been an ARE member for years. And there was a program over here in Chapel Hill that was going to be held at the Binkley Baptist Church by the local Triangle team.
Right.
And I signed up for that program. And I also signed up for another program in Charlotte, an actual live program, the next day on Sunday. So I went to both of those programs, and as it turned out, things just meshed on that Saturday with the people in the area. Because, number one, the only way I compare it, I was finally around people for the first time that I could talk to about some of the things that I felt and I believed in, who understood what the heck I was talking about. You know, who felt the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way I've described it in the past to people, it must be almost like a gay coming out of the closet. Finally, for the first time, he can be who he really is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was me when I first started going to some of these ARE events. And then later, I basically got talked into going to Search for God study groups. And I'll tell yourself a joke on me.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
On one of the first ARE study groups I went to. I was very, very hesitant about going because, like I said, I was a construction worker heading out in the woods, living out in the woods. And I went to this study group. And there's a order to your study group that's recommended. And part of that is following the study of the material. You may chant if you would like to, you know. To raise the vibrations, and then you meditate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the people in this study group was going, A-R-E. I mean, he was saying, to me, it sounded exactly like A-R-E.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of that, when everybody settled down, like I say, this is my very first study group now.
Right.
I had to tell them, I said, "Now, people, I am not comfortable worshiping the ARE." And that's what they all did. They laughed and laughed and laughed. It was just that one person.
Because
it was supposed to be just the toning, the sound.
Yes, the local schizophrenic ones. Probably never saw the person again, right?
Well, no, he's actually rather prominent in this area in some circles.
Uh-huh.
But he's a nutcase.
Okay.
He's a lovable nutcase.
Yes, there's lots of lovable nutcases get involved with this stuff. But you know where they say, wherever there's a great light, there are lots of bugs get attracted. Okay. So talk a little bit more about your attraction. Well, actually, let's take a break here for a second. I'll let you get a drink of water, and I'm going to tell everybody, you know, if you're a local business, WCOM has opportunities for you, for local businesses, to underwrite a show on the Carrboro Chapel Hills all-volunteer, listener-supported community radio station. Yes, that is WCOM. Carrboro Chapel Hill, what you're listening to now, this is Touchstones. Actually, one of the great things about underwriting this show or other shows that you may find that you listen to from WCOM is there is no commercial clutter. Your messages will always stand out. And to find out you can email underwriting@communityradio.coop. That's communityradio, one word, .coop, COOP. Dot coop, I guess is the way it would be. But no, this is not a chicken coop, though. If you looked at it from the outside, you might think it used to be. Tom, back to your the mystical in pursuit of Tom, God seeking Tom. Well, God looking for Tom. Tom not knowing whether God's looking for him or not.
Right. There's always something inside of us trying to get out, you know, and we have to recognize it.
Usually that's after a big meal.
Well, my thing with the ARE, like I said, was that they were wonderful. Most people who were interested in the ARE were interested in the healing work. Because Edgar Cayce was proved to be so unbelievably accurate in everything he did. My focus in the ARME material, the readings, so to speak, there are over 14,000 readings recorded and down that public can have access to. My interest was the spirituality in the readings, because it was amazing spirituality, basically talking about God is within us all, waiting to be recognized in it. We just have to realize it and turn to it. And on and on and on. It just goes on and on. But in the course of that, I would, you know, go to the study group, study it and discuss, or do all my other outside reading. And eventually, I started using a device called a radioactive appliance. Those things that, you know, I make. And I got interested in...
Now, a radioactive appliance is not radioactive. I just wanted to make sure that people understood that. You're not hooking yourself up to some radium and then hoping that it'll heal you somehow, which actually used to happen back in the 20s and 30s. But why don't you explain what this radioactive appliance is?
Well, the radioactive appliance, by Edgar Cayce, is actually one of the earliest forms of energy medicine, subtle energies. The very first radioactive appliances were nothing more than wires wrapped around high carbon bars, and these bars were dropped into buckets of ice water, and then the wires were draped around the human body to basically recalibrate the energy field in the human body, like chakras, it balances it. Anyway, I was introduced to it. An engineer sent me a little booklet of all these Edgar Cayce readings strictly related to the radioactive appliance. Because I had always ignored them. Because when I'd see it in the articles, Venture Inward, I thought, well, that's more of that healing stuff. And I wouldn't even look at it. But when I was reading through this little booklet that he had sent me, it got to a place in there. It said spiritual unfoldment using the radioactive appliance. And I started reading all these readings where Edgar Cayce was basically saying that hooking up to a radioactive appliance while you were reading what you're spiritually drawn to or meditating was like supercharging your spiritual development. Mm-hmm. There was one reading that some friends had gone to Cayce about this lady who was sick. And the answer came back from Mr. Cayce that it's too late. The illness has progressed too far. She cannot be saved this physical lifetime.
Right.
However, the best thing in the world you can do to her is hook her up to a radioactive appliance,
right,
and then read to her certain chapters of John and whatnot out of the Bible.
Now, once you to give a people a slightly better idea, can you just sort of describe? There's actually like two kinds of radioactive appliances, right? There's sort of the wet cell and the dry cell. Can you describe what they're like?
All right, the radioactive appliance is actually, I call mine the ice appliance. It is actually two pieces of high carbon steel that are separated by glass, wrapped in quarter inch carbon, taped together securely, then placed in a waterproof container that crushed charcoal has been packed all the way around it on all sides, bottom and all sides and top, and then sealed in there. And out of those two high carbon steel bars are two brass receptacles to plug in a banana plug.
Mm-hmm.
And then you place this sealed container into a non-metallic bucket of ice and water filled up to within an inch and a half the top,
mm-hmm.
and let it cool for about 20 to 30 minutes.
Right.
And then you attach it to the rest. Cayce always rotated for the general use, which he said would be good for everybody throughout their entire life. General use would rotate it around the body, like the positive would go on the left wrist, the negative would go on the inside of the right ankle.
Right.
Now, this is where you would take your pulse points.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Then you'd use it for 30 minutes to an hour or whatever. The next time you would use it, the positive would go on the left, inside the left ankle, and then the negative on the inside of the right. You just keep rotating it around your body. Now,
right.
That's the general use that Casey recommended most often.
Right.
But then he also made a variation on that where you would use it with solution jars.
Mm-hmm.
And solution jars, you would add things like gold chloride or silver nitrate, iodine, whatever, camphor, depends on what condition
right.
that you were being treated. Now, Casey has made the statement that with the use of gold chloride and silver nitrate used vibrationally, administered
right.
vibration to the human body
right.
with the radioactive appliance,
right.
you can literally rebuild the human brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he goes into details on how you do it and what the body needs. But I personally feel that the gold chloride is superb for mental clarity.
Or rejuvenation.
It is. I mean, I right now, I am using on almost a daily basis a radioactive appliance with silver nitrate and gold chloride. For a month or two, I just use strictly gold chloride just to rejuvenate and rebuild. You know, and I think it's fantastic. People have to.
You have to try it for yourself.
Well, one of the things too is I have such an absolute trust of Edgar Casey, the material that came through him.
Right.
I trust him so much. That's why I.
Yeah. The of course, you know, if for the skeptics out there, one of the things the radioactive appliance causes you to do is it causes you to actually sit still for about 45 minutes or so and meditate. So even if it doesn't work, it works because it's causing you to sit still and meditate.
Well, now, Casey,
and it has a lot of benefit in that way.
Well, Casey also recommended it in a tremendous number of cases of people who were not able to go to sleep at night unless they were taking drugs. Cause him to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And then they could start using the radioactive appliance and they could go to sleep naturally within a few uses. Now, I used to host a Search for God study group at my home. And due to the fact that it is so good for spiritual development unfoldment,
right.
most of us in the group, during the course of the study group, were using a radioactive appliance.
Right.
Hooked up to one during the course of the study group. And it got kind of funny. Because a lot of times, some of the people would just go to sleep.
Oh, you mean during the class?
During the class, they would go to sleep because they're sitting there hooked up to that radioactive appliance.
As well as discussing and reading the Search for God material.
Right, and we finally decided that their unconscious was taking in the needed material, even though they were snoring softly.
Yes, yeah, that's like me watching a movie the other day on Mother's Day with my friend. As soon as the movie began, I went to sleep. As soon as the movie was about over, I woke up.
You know? Well, I've had that experience with you at the movies, too.
Yes, right, yeah. Well, if I've seen the movie, folks, it's hard to stay awake. I think my own movies are better. So,
all right, let me tell you about the wet cell a little bit.
Okay.
All right. The ice appliance or the radioactive appliance is activated by placing it in a bucket of ice and filling it up with water. So coal activates it.
All right.
All right. The wet cell is actually a battery. It produces a mild charge similar to that of the human body. And Edgar Casey came up with that because initially he was given the radioactive appliance. And then more and more people would come to him. He souped that up with solutions. And then as people who had totally been given up on by their doctors with Alzheimer's and schizophrenia, dementia, and multiple sclerosis started coming to Casey, he recommended the wet cell appliance because it was a stronger. You're using the same solutions, basically.
Right. Uh-huh.
But it is a stronger thing. So that's what I always tell people. If you've got a very serious condition that's already been diagnosed, you might be better off with a wet cell because it's stronger. If your body's energy is already depleted, that you can't move this stuff around the body, go with the wet cell.
Uh-huh.
But do not go with the wet cell if you don't need it because it's in the long run, it's more expensive because the charge chemicals have to be replaced every month and then the solutions have to be replaced after each 15 uses.
Yeah, yeah. So that could be, if you're using the silver nitrate or the gold nitrate, that could be pretty expensive. Huh?
Right.
Okay, so so far we're having a hard time moving you out of the magical into the mystical.
All right.
But you still got some time here, Tom, so maybe right. We'll get you into the mystical yet, you know. Tom's visions of the divine. Come on, I know you got them.
I do have them.
Fess up now.
I've got back years ago when Joseph Campbell was doing that, The Power of Myth. And mm-hmm. in that stuff, he was talking about how monks could be murdered and still love their murderers at the time they were being murdered.
That was a hard one to buy.
I wasn't buying that at all, because for me, it was sugar for sugar and salt for salt. I realized that I could probably, sometime after the event, muster up some forgiveness. But if it was during the course of somebody trying to kill me, it was going to be sugar for sugar and salt for salt.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, this was in the 80s, I reckon, 80s or early 90s, whenever Joel Goldsmith.
All right.
Whenever Moyers was doing that.
Bill Moyers, well, he was doing Joseph Campbell thing, right.
Yeah. Anyway, during the course of a meditation, I was suddenly just absolutely engulfed in love. I was love. And I had a sensation of myself as a monk. And I was sitting in the lotus position, so to speak, meditating, and in trucked this soldier to kill me. But he wanted me to suffer first. And he chopped off my left wrist. Now this, I'm sitting there like I'm actually experiencing it. And he chopped off my hand at the wrist.
Yikes.
But during this, there is absolutely nothing but unbelievable love pouring out of me during this.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't satisfy him. So he chopped up a little higher, you know. And still, there was absolutely but nothing but love just pouring out of me.
And no resistance.
No, it was unbelievable. And at some point, I came out of that, you know, and then went on about my work. And at the time, I was working on a carpenter on a timber frame home outside between Pittsburgh and Sanford. And I stopped on the way to work for a PepsiCo and a pack of Tom's Peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
And when I spoke to the clerk, I said, good morning. I saw them just kind of reel back and all. And I realized later that I was still carrying so much of the energy of that meditation with me.
Yeah.
That it was affecting people around me.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was one of my first really significant mystical experiences.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that one before. I've noticed that myself. Usually you're, at least in my experience for myself, is I'm usually alone when I have my, you know, big mystical experience. In a few cases, after the experience has subsided and I'm going about my business and I bump into people, I do notice that they respond to me differently than my ordinary gruff self. There's a more receptivity. People talk to me. I talk to them. I don't know what it is, but there's a change, you know. And I can see this, the responsiveness to whatever this sense of love or vision or whatever took place at the time. And I always thought that was I always thought that was a healthy feedback system.
It was remarkable to me because it was the responses of the people.
Yeah.
Because I didn't feel any different.
It was just some fantasy. You know? It was just an intense fantasy.
Yeah, and I'm just going on to work as a good old boy, you know.
Yeah, right.
But yet, I really was affecting people as I came into contact with them, just from that energy. And also, one thing I was saying, well, it won't me, because I've never felt any love like it.
Yeah,
you know, I've had psychics tell me for over 20 years that I'm a spiritual healer,
mm-hmm.
and I have poo-pooed it, said nah, because mm-hmm. I am just a carpenter. But I honestly believe, had I been in that state and somebody been in need of any kind of healing, they would have gotten it, because it wasn't me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the whatever this sense of love and things. So why don't you? Okay, you experienced this once.
You're trying to
be another time.
You're trying to get me to go into December, aren't you?
No, I'm not trying to get you going in December. I mean, you know, you don't have to be Santa Claus. You just have to be. No, I'm just trying to get you to, you know, explain your own growth and understanding this stuff. Like, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, I will slip on into December too. Mention that. I have been reading and studying the ARE material and Rudolf Steiner, Course in Miracles, and Joel Goldsmith. Back in the early 90s, I got introduced to Joel Goldsmith, and I've been a Joel Goldsmith fanatic ever since. Really drawn to that material. And back in December, I had an experience of conscious union with God. I had been down on my knees, which is something I almost would never do, was down on my knees praying for guidance and, Father, let me know what thy will is and I'll do it. I'm having a hard time figuring it out, but let me know and I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I got up, I suddenly had an experience of oneness with all the life and the trees and the animals and everything around me. And then I went on into conscious union with God, at which point I saw how universes were created from basically God's thought, God's will. I mean, how everything unfolded from God. We're all at all times a part of God, but we have to consciously realize it. And so for several months after that, I just went around beaming love at everybody, and I thought everything was going to be hunky-dory.
Yeah, he even got along with me.
Well, then, in late February and early March, I crashed. I went into a deep depression, flu-like illness. In fact, you and I talked sometime during that time because I was supposed to go meet you for a movie, but I was too busy throwing up.
Yeah, that's right. You were really sick for a couple of weeks.
Well, sometime later, after that, I received a phone call from, I think, Mary Phyllis Horn. You've had her on your program, I believe.
That's right. She's the shaman.
Right. Well, I received a phone call from her. She wanted me to help her with her email stuff, but I didn't have AOL, and she thought I did. And I told her about the experience I'd had in December, and then the fact that I had crashed and gotten so sick and depressed. And she said, well, I think that's an initiation. I think that's what it is. Something, you're being initiated into a higher level.
Yeah. Well.
And I think, well, you know, I said, but I've got no money. You know, I'm going broke. My business is drying up with the radioactive appliances and wet cells. And she said, but you've got your spiritual healing. And I went, well, what's coming?
So you decided to become go down to the hospital and visit with folks?
Well, no, you know what I've realized, Paul, one of the striking things, like I said, I always have lived out in the woods, stayed by myself, minding my own business.
And you figured that's what you should continue doing.
Well, that's what I had been doing up until that crash point, even after I had experienced conscious union with God. But I would never talk to people. Like you said, you never heard that experience about being the monk and being in government.
That's right.
I would not talk much about the different things I experienced.
It wasn't like I wasn't prying either.
I have had a lot of different experiences of the paranormal and mystical and whatnot throughout the years. But I've always just noted it and moved on, never talk about it much because I was just a good old boy, carpenter and a welder and whatnot. But I found two things striking after that depression experience that Mary Phyllis said was an initiation.
Right.
One, I've lost any interest in drinking alcohol. I used to always have two or three glasses of wine or something in the evening. I have not had just no interest in it since. Mm-hmm. Plus, all of a sudden now I'm willing to talk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to talk to people about some of the things I've experienced, some of the things I'm going through. It used to be psychics would tell me that spirit wanted to use me talking to audiences.
Right.
And I would say, yeah, all I can tell them right now is don't do what I've done because it hadn't worked out too well.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But something in me has changed since that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I find now, like, how many times do you try to get me to come on your show and talk about Joel Goldsmith?
Oh, well, a lot of times. And by the way, folks, since he didn't talk about Joe Goldstone on the show, we'll have him back. We'll have him back sometime later in the summer, you know, when it's so hot, we won't have anything better to do but talk about Joe Goldsmith. But the there are other people besides Joe Goldsmith and Edgar Casey that you've found interesting over the years. Other
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean
definitely. I mean, like Rudolf Steiner. I was reading all kinds of Steiner for for years and years.
I'm sort of being forced into reading a little more Steiner myself because I conduct a teleconference on Wednesdays for people studying Meditations on the Tarot, which is Christian hermetic work. Uh-huh. Very mystical and very elaborate. It probably helps to be a Catholic theologian to appreciate it because he does require a lot. But he had been an anthroposophist, the anonymous guy who wrote Meditations on the Tarot. His actual name was Valentin Tomberg. And, so I've been reading him, and Tomberg was for many years an anthroposophist. And then he later sort of gave that up and became converted to Catholicism. His legacy, his esoteric legacy, is this one book, you know, which are letters on the major arcana of the Marseille Tarot. And since some of you may know, one of my hobbies is that I'm a Tarot reader. And occasionally I actually go to a festival or two and I'll read Tarot for any old buddy that comes by. And, people wonder about that Tarot. Why do you do that? They wonder, Paul. And basically, Tarot is like, it's a deck of cards that have symbols on them. And the symbols are like windows into dreaming. And for me, the great meaning for ourselves, the way we begin to know ourselves in a more fulsome way, it's not the only way, but it's definitely a healthy way, is through your dreams. You know, like I'm sure you've had many dreams at one time or another that have, you know, been like initiations and shown you new ways to be with yourself.
Let me tell you one of my favorite ones.
Okay.
One of my favorite dreams, y'all all familiar with the Michelangelo reaching out to touch the fingers of God?
Yeah. That painting. Well, up at the Sistine Chapel. Yeah.
One night, I had a dream that in that dream I was reaching out with my left hand to touch God's fingers. And at the very moment my fingers touched God's fingers, I realized I was touching my own fingers in a mirror. Now, that's the kind of dream I like because you don't have to take a lot of interpretation to interpret that one.
Yeah, that's
the
right.
The answer is right quick, like, quit looking outside for God. God is within, closer than breathing, nearer than hands and feet.
That's right. And the last time I needed to itch my nose, I went over to the mirror and scratched it. Yeah. okay. That's an amazing possibility. Is this sense of unity that brings us to it? And as I said, one of the approaches of opening ourselves up to who we are in a sort of immediate, sort of natural way is becoming aware of the symbolic language of dreams, which, you know, takes a little effort. I mean, but what it does is it brings us back to the sort of root metaphors of our existence that are the natural symbols that occur imagerily in our dreaming and, are also the roots of all of the natural languages that we speak and the natural metaphors, the natural forms of transformation that take place in dream become, as it were, the habitual ways that we make grammars and the way we make stories and narratives that become the basis or the scripts of ourself, you know, and are connected with our feelings and our emotions and our sense of rituals and our behaviors and the way we construct purpose and meaning, which is interesting way of saying is that this is what we do to be who we are while we're alive. The thing about it is that it has its own natural gravitas. And now I know that one of the things that we talked about briefly was that gravitas. I think it's sort of like we'll skip over some stuff here and talk about one of my favorite metaphors for the divine presence that you were talking about is awareness, that just being simply aware is the presence of God.
Well, you have to bring, you know, God is present in everything.
Yes.
But it's not active until it is consciously, until the individual is consciously aware that God is active.
Right.
In there. I mean, just knowing that God consists of everything that's out there is not going to help anyone do anything. People
right.
have been knowing that and thinking that and praying for thousands of years.
That's an objectifying this thing. This is the supreme subjectivity. This is awareness. Everything. The only way that I know anything is because I'm aware of it. But that awareness is not me being aware. That is God's awareness. It's a gift to
me.
Well,
again, I'm going to have to back up and disagree slightly with you there.
That's all right.
When you make an interpretation, the only thing that's aware is God's aware of. Like, we're down here in this world and we're seeing all kinds of sickness, illness, wars, and stuff like that. God doesn't know anything about that.
Neither does your awareness. Your awareness judges not. Your awareness doesn't judge. Your awareness is awareness. We make the judgments. We're the
That's
ones
right.
that say it's sickness. We're the ones that say it's health. We're the ones that give it this thing. But the awareness is aware of either. It's like rain. It rains on the wet and the dry. You know,
and
it's there. You know, it's like light. It doesn't judge.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. Okay, so,
if you have to become aware that you are the awareness. You have to consciously bring that into your realization at all times.
And the interesting thing about it is that you can't actually do that. That can only be done by the awareness itself.
Well, you can make yourself ready for it.
Yes, that's right. You can plow the field, but you can't plant the seed.
Right. Like, there's... I remember in an ARE study group sitting outside at a picnic table years ago telling some friends that I felt like there was something inside me that was really beautiful and powerful, but I just didn't know how to get it out, let it out.
Okay.
You know, and I knew it was there, but I had it so covered up with this mindset of who I was as a carpenter and a welder and a good old boy and a cat hat. That I could not begin to bring that portion that was so wonderful out of me. That portion is in every one of us.
Yeah.
You know, and we have to start finding a way to let it out. And that is done by consciously realizing every moment of every day as much as we can that God is the only good. God is all there is. You know, this life we're living is... the one we've created out of mind, the second chapters of Genesis, not the first chapter.
Yeah.
It's what we have created out of mind, because that's what I also saw in that conscious union experience I had in early December. Of course, now I've worked on this for years. I've been studying Joel Goldsmith and this type of theology for years.
Until you got, as it were, whacked over the head with it.
I did get whacked over the head with it.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I really... I finally will talk about it now rather than just read it and study it. And
well, actually, I know that there's lots more to your story than what you told us today. And so one of these things we'll do is we'll get you back on here and we'll get you to do chapter 2 about Tom's Odyssey. And this has been Touchstones on WCOM. That's a communityradio.coop. You can listen to us through the internet, through web streaming live. You can also get podcasts of this show, which is available. So you've been listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill, Carrboro. This is your community radio station, 103.5 FM. So thank you so much. Next week, we have a new experiment where I am going to be talking to someone from Washington, D.C., from Scientology. And we're going to find out as much about Scientology as Scientologists want us to know. So on that note, take care and thank you for having been here.